Welcome to Business and Oil. Articles from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Read by volunteers at the Recording Library of West Texas.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Sunday, February 2nd, 2020. Section F, Oil Report. Managing Water. Lane Water Midstream, Texas GLO Expand Partnership. By Mella McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. Having proved its record sourcing water for hydraulic fracturing on wells drilled on Texas General Land Office acreage in Reeves and Culberson counties, Lane Water Midstream and the GLO have expanded their partnership. The two entities announced that Lane now has exclusive rights for reuse and disposal rights on approximately 88,000 acres of GLO land across Reeves and Culberson counties. Lane will develop, construct, and operate water infrastructure on the acreage to gather, transport, treat, recycle, and dispose of produced water. The GLO had been hesitant to do this. Disposal wells are such a sensitive issue, J. Michael Anderson, Chief Executive Officer of Lane Water Midstream, said in a phone interview. Our pitch was, you want to control disposal and partner with a company that does it right, he said. That's why it can be important to utilize a full-cycle water company like Lane, he said. Lane will be able to generate revenues from the sale and service of water on the acreage, which will be shared between Lane and with the permanent school fund that is managed by the GLO. This generates revenue, and it lets the GLO be more in control of how water infrastructure is developed on their acreage, Anderson said. It also pushes along reuse, recycle, and retreat, and those are high on Lane's priority list, as well as a top priority for the GLO. We see that in how ESG, environment, social, and governance, comes into play, he said. There are also increasing economic reasons. Treatment costs have come down. He said that all the water Lane sources for oil and gas operations is brackish and non-potable. How water is handled depends on the area, Anderson said. He said reuse is preferable when source water is not plentiful or there is limited disposal infrastructure. The technology to retreat and use produced water is becoming more economical, he said. No matter how much produced water we use, there's an imbalance. There's more water that we can use for our operations, he said. There will always be an amount of water that has to be disposed. The company actively monitors the water tables. Anderson said that as the company seeks disposal well permits from the Railroad Commission, it adds seismicity monitors to help understand what's happening on the subsurface and to be good stewards of the environment. We're putting our own money into these monitoring stations, he said. The expansion of the contract with GLO is still in its early stages, but Anderson said Lane has submitted more than a handful of applications for saltwater disposal wells. For most of the year, he said the company will be marketing the new infrastructure and developing commercial contracts. By the end of the year, he said Lane will be deploying capital for the new recycling and disposal infrastructure build-out. New Mexico Consortium seeks to expand use of produced water. By Mella McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. As the Permian Basin Water and Energy Conference enters its third year, participants are looking for ways to do more with the water produced alongside crude and natural gas than recycling it into new wells or disposing of it in underground disposal wells. Industry representatives said there is far more produced water than can be used in hydraulic fracturing and completions, a topic that will be a focus of the conference at the Horseshoe, February 19th through 21st. Produced water treatment and reuse is important, but our consortium is focused on looking at ways to reuse produced water outside the oil and gas sector. Michael Hightower, Program Director of the New Mexico Produced Water Research Consortium, said in a phone interview. Hightower will be participating in a panel discussion on the final day of the conference, addressing opportunities for innovation in science for higher education. The consortium is a partnership between New Mexico State University and the New Mexico Environmental Department. Hightower said the consortium, which is in its early stages, is looking at uses for produced water in agriculture, rangeland reclamation, industrial applications, such as for power plants and road construction in oil-producing areas where roads have been negatively impacted. Other uses being looked at include water use on golf courses and greenscapes and aquifer storage when water needs to be stored. New Mexico Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham has called for the state to develop a 50-year water plan, and Hightower said treatment and reuse of produced water could be part of that effort. New Mexico continues to be in a long-term drought, so any new source of water is of importance, he said. Another issue is that New Mexico is running out of disposal wells, so other ways of handling water are needed, he said. The consortium, which currently has about 75 members, offers an opportunity for people in West Texas and Southeast New Mexico to be part of it and help drive research and implementation of technology. The consortium is in its early stages. The memorandum of understanding creating it was signed in September. We have a steering committee. We have working groups. We're reaching out to oil and gas operators, midstream, academics, even non-government organizations, environmental groups, land managers, Hightower said. We're all trying to work together to come up with solutions for everyone. He said the Environmental Protection Agency is expected to announce on February 27th its Water Reuse Action Plan. For the produced water portion of the plan, the consortium has been tapped to help with research, demonstrations, and implementation of technology. Concho Resources in Veras offering field ticket auditing platform. By Mella McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. The efficiencies Permian Basin oil and gas operators are seeking aren't limited to their drilling projects. Efficiencies in the supply chain and in billing are also a target. To that end, Concho Resources is teaming up with Enverus to market a new platform to ensure more accurate billing. Concho and Enverus have been partners in excess of a decade, Dave Savelle, vice president over Enverus' open ticket application, said in a phone interview. They've worked closely with us on various projects, and Concho was an early adapter of our digital ticketing technology, he said. The two are bringing to market a new product, Audit Analytics, which has its foundation in Concho's proprietary vendor auditing program that it developed using data from Enverus Open Invoice and Open Ticket applications. Traditionally, suppliers would provide a field ticket and the operator would accept the ticket, Savelle said. With Open Invoice and Open Ticket, his company digitized the process. Concho adopted Open Ticket 3 years ago. All their water haulers use it, he said. Then Concho said, hey, there's an opportunity there to analyze digitally when we're looking at a ticket. Concho developed the application independently of Enverus, but Enverus gave Concho access to its application interface, letting the operator develop its application with Enverus data. Once they developed it and proved it out, they said, let's commercialize this and make it more broadly available, Savelle said. Concho referred the Reporter-Telegram to a statement from Jack Harper, president, in announcing plans to market Audit Analytics. Operating efficiently is a key priority for Concho, And as part of our efforts to reduce costs, we developed a solution that identifies and mitigates vendor overbilling. We are proud to work with Enveris to bring our system to market as Audit Analytics. We believe there is significant demand for this type of solution as other companies across our industry look to eliminate fraud and strengthen cost controls. Savell estimated that 60 operators, many in the Permian Basin, use OpenTicket, not just for their water haulers, but all aspects of their operations. He said more than 3,400 suppliers submit digital tickets through the platform. The challenge with field tickets from high-volume, low-cost supplies, water hauling, chemical companies, hot oilers, is there are so many tickets it's hard for an operator to give proper oversight and ensure the work has been done. A lot of the work is done without a Concho representative there. Unlike drilling and completions, where there's a Concho representative on the rig floor or on the site, a lot of production work is done without an operator representative on site. Companies such as Concho can have more than 100 suppliers just focused on fluid hauling at their sites, he said. Operators get literally hundreds of field tickets a day. For the big shale operators in West Texas, the scope of operations is remarkable. The sheer volume of work makes it challenging to make sure the tickets are properly vetted. Auditing the field tickets with a platform such as Audit Analytics could result in tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions, of dollars saved from elimination of fraud or unnecessary spending. Savell said that not all misplaced capital is due to fraudulent field tickets. Some is from miscalculations. Most service companies are actually small mom-and-pop businesses without rigorous back offices, he said. Customers say it's as much a symptom of the sheer volume of business as of fraud. Adopting a platform like Audit Analytics will not only benefit the operator by ensuring the company pays only for work that was done and prevents a mistaken payment before it is made, but helps the vendor by ensuring the vendor gets paid in a timely manner and without delays caused by audits, he said. Enveris will be taking the product to market and offering it as part of their broad portfolio of programs, Savell said. We are talking to early adapters who have an understanding of our products and working with Enveris. They can give us insight into the unique challenges they face, he said. He expects it will be offered up as a commercial offering sometime in the second quarter of the year. Savell said the platform can be useful to operators large and small. This is completely scalable. We have 60-plus OpenTicket users, from XTO to ConocoPhillips to Concho to smaller operators who have one-tenth of the operating volumes of a Concho, one-tenth the volumes, but the same challenges, he said. Changing marketplace. Private equity adjusting to changing energy marketplace. By Mella McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. Private equity has been investing in businesses for more than a century, but private equity funds targeting the energy industry didn't appear until roughly 30 years ago. Even in that short amount of time, the marketplace has changed significantly, according to David Hobson, a partner in PetroCap LLC. Addressing members of the Society of Independent Professional Earth Scientists last week, Hobson said more than $178 billion is looking for a home in upstream or midstream assets. Those billions will have a hard time finding a home, and Hobson detailed several reasons why. The leading source of private equity funding has been foundations and public pension funds, followed by private pension plans and endowments, such as from the University of Texas and Stanford, Yale, and Harvard universities, he said. But now those same endowments are under tremendous pressure from professors and students to stop investing in oil and gas, making it harder for private equity to raise funds, he said. He went on to note that private equity funds, as a rule, don't see returns on their investments until they sell the assets. But public equity funding to the energy industry has essentially been shut off, making it difficult for the private equity funds to sell those assets. Private equity funds have figured out that they need to hold their assets for a longer period, he said. The funds have lowered their threshold on rates of return and shifted their strategy from build and flip to build a business, he said. And they're reevaluating their portfolios, he said. As the big funds realize they have 17 companies at work in the Delaware Basin that they're paying overhead for, they realize they can't do that any longer, so they take those 17 companies and say, we only need 7 or 8 or 5, and they squish them into that number. The dark side of that is, if you're a company that gets squished, all that work you put into that company, all that you've built, is now owned by someone else. The larger equity funds are now focusing on investments of $100 million or more. Large funds such as NCAP, NGP, and Kayne Anderson are raising billions, Hobson said, and are having to invest those billions in larger increments in order to see returns. Funds are also returning to their roots and focusing on proved, developed, producing assets with cash flow and low risk and working to lower costs and improve operational efficiencies, he said. A number of funds are establishing portfolios focused on mineral and royalty rights. In 2016, private equity spent money to sponsor royalty companies, he said. There are 36 private equity fund sponsors that have made 62 commitments to mineral and royalty companies. Hobson urged his audience to extend their focus on ESG and said private equity firms as well as Wall Street investors are studying how operators deal with the environment, social issues, and corporate governance. Whether or not they agree with all the environmental movement's positions, he said, the green movement is real. Citing Swedish teenager Greta Thunberg, he said, a lot of what she says appeals to those 16 to 30 who are making up their minds about how they feel about our industry. If a potential investor asked PetroCap about ESG concerns and was told there was nothing to those concerns, our investments would stop, he said. A number of the super majors, such as ExxonMobil and Shell, and even large independents, such as Pioneer Natural Resources, are addressing concerns. Hobson said much of it is common sense issues, such as emissions and how secure berms are in holding drilling and frack ponds. By the way, this applies to all industries, he said. We need to understand where they're coming from because they will have a bigger say in how our industry is run. Chemical company offers solution to frack hits by Mella McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. It's an issue Permian Basin oil and gas operators have been grappling with as they drill wells in tighter and tighter quarters. How to keep hydraulic fracturing of the newer or child wells from interfering or damaging the older or parent wells, or being damaged themselves. It's a dire problem, Eric Foster, chief executive officer of 10X Technologies, said in a phone interview. He said that over the next couple of years, domestic oil and gas production will begin to decline because drillers can't drill enough wells to offset the lower productivity of damaged parent wells, or the child wells. As competitive as the industry is, companies recognize the existential threat this is, especially in the Permian Basin, he said. If we don't come up with a solution, the Permian Basin could lose its place as the top producing region in the world. There's good acreage that can't be tapped because of the frack hit problem. The industry is desperate to find better strategies to protect the parent whales and get more production from the child whales, he said. Rystad, the energy consulting service, estimates that only 20% of the whales drilled in the Permian Basin in the third quarter of last year were parent whales. Foster's Philadelphia-based oil field chemical company is offering a chemical solution as opposed to a mechanical solution. No Hit is designed to be pumped as an additive to a parent whale's preload or active loading program. Our product involves the injection of a chemical solution that includes aluminum, Foster said. Then we inject an activator, which will vary depending on the characteristics of the whale. That activator will change the pH of the water in the whale and cause the aluminum to react, stripping the hydrogen off the water and generating hydrogen gas. That gas pressurizes the depleted rock and increasing associated rock stress, discouraging child whale fractures from communicating with the parent whale fractures. That not only protects the parent whale, but encourages the fractures in the child whales to target new reservoirs, Foster said. To address the problem, some operators inject gas, which can be expensive, while other companies shut in the whale for a period of time to let the reservoir build up pressure, he said. Others preload the whale with water. He described the Permian Basin as thirsty ground with big whales that take an ocean of water to fill every nook and cranny. I just need enough water that the aluminum will react. I just need a small lake, not an ocean. Foster said he believes No Hit it will improve the capital structure of his customers. He used the example of a producer who based his reservoir value on density of 100 whales, but could only drill 50 because the communication between whales impaired production. You've reduced your reservoir value 50%, he said. This is almost a live-or-die problem. If we and others can help restore reservoir value by restoring density, that helps the bottom line. There is a cost to his product, he acknowledged. But when you spent $7 million on a whale, how much is it worth to not wreck it? He said. The technology has worked well in the lab, and Foster said he is anxious to get it in the ground. It will be used for the first time by the end of February, he said. The company has been in talks with producers in several producing basins, including in the Niobrara, Eagle Ford, and in Calgary, Alberta, but he said it is strongly focused on the Permian Basin. He wants companies to talk to us about how they would experiment with our product and urges collaboration to find solutions. TXOGA, energy industry must address environment to maintain growth, by Mella McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. Todd Staples, president of the Texas Oil and Gas Association, proudly detailed the record-shattering contribution the state's oil and gas industry made to state and local coffers, $16.4 billion in state and local taxes and royalties. But amid the good news, he said last week in a media call discussing the association's annual report on the industry's economic impact, there are challenges ahead. We know growth is not guaranteed, he said. The industry responds to marketplace demands. We know global demand will continue, but that growth won't be at as high a rate as we've seen. Therefore, production won't grow as robustly as in the past. Asked about the focus on climate change and an influx of new voters who support eliminating fossil fuels, Staples stressed that the energy industry is committed to addressing climate change and is taking steps to be as no carbon or low carbon as possible. We believe all emissions contribute to climate change, and the industry is doing its part to reduce emissions, he said. We need to look at all sources, every source of energy produced. The oil and gas industry has a responsibility to find solutions through innovation and technology to control emissions and responsibly produce energy. We share a common goal of environmental progress and economic strength, Staples said. No matter how much you advocate for renewables, there's no replacement for how much good comes from oil and natural gas. He said Texas is at risk if we don't have a real, factual conversation about climate change. We're committed to making progress. We're committed to being leaders on the environment.
Hello, this is Becky. Drive to cut emissions will boost carbon capture, use, storage efforts. More than ever, energy companies are working to reduce their carbon dioxide and methane emissions and improve their environmental footprint. It's part of the industry's rising commitment to ESG, environmental, social, and governance, and sustainability policies. We try to do what makes sense, lower our emissions, and be more efficient, said Daryl Ricketson, Vice President and Chief Operating Officer of Kinder Morgan CO2 Company. Whether those efforts change the public's mind is a different question, he said. While in Midland last week to address the annual CO2 conference at the Barbara and George H.W. Bush Convention Center. Ricketson was addressing the first day of the conference, which was designated as a carbon management workshop. He said the company's Tall Cotton Field in Gaines County is the industry's first greenfield residual oil zone project. Tall cotton is a good potential resource that offers good pay, but processing rate and sweep challenges, he said. Optimizing future development of the field will require more data and better understanding of the field and its complex geology. Asked if Kinder Morgan is eyeing other ROZ fields, he said the company needs to study what it has before determining if there are other targets, and the oil price needs to be high enough to fund development. Developing tall cotton and other residual oil zones offers not only significant oil targets, but good potential for carbon capture, use, and storage, Ricketson said. The energy industry's growing commitment to environmental responsibility and sustainability will complement CCUS growth, he said. Technology and the ingenuity of people is needed to crack the code, he said. Kinder Morgan has been active in the CO2 sector for several decades and acquired Shell's CO2 operations in 2000. The same year it took over Devon Energy, the Scurry Area Canyon Reef Operators Committee, SACROC, unit operations in Scurry County, where CO2-based enhanced oil recovery operations had been started by Chevron in 1973. The company is also deploying various CO2 projects in the Yates Field. Ricketson estimates his company's injection of CO2 to enhance oil recovery has prevented 111 billion cubic feet in emissions. The company transports 1.3 billion cubic feet per day of sourced CO2 and recycles 1.8 billion cubic feet of CO2. Through CO2 injections, the company produces 55,000 barrels of oil per day and 121,000 barrels of natural gas liquids per day, and through its pipelines transports 140,000 barrels of oil per day. From 2000 to 2019, the company spent $7.8 billion for the entire CO2 segment, with $1.5 billion of that for sourcing and transporting CO2. Continued development of CO2 supplies is needed to satisfy not only customer demand for existing projects, but future flooding projects, he said. Supplies are available, and Ricketson said while the company's supplies currently come from naturally occurring sources at McElmo Dome, future supplies will come from industrial sources. They'll come from emissions from different industrial plants. They'll capture the emissions and we'll take them away, he said. Challenges include rising costs for wellbores infrastructure needs, and regulations. The regulatory process, Rickardson said, requires significant planning time, with the permitting process taking from 2 to 4 years and involves local, state, and federal agencies. The good news, he told conference attendees, is that concern about the environment will drive more carbon capture projects, which is good for enhanced oil recovery. The pending changes to the 45Q tax statute will help close the gap of economic hurdles, but he said more is needed. What will really help advance carbon capture, use, and storage is developing and attracting those with CO2 EOR expertise, he said. It's a specialized industry that requires great ideas, ingenuity, and strong work ethic. Complex problem solving and diverse disciplines are needed in this business, he said.
Thank you for listening to this week's Business and Oil articles from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers at the Recording Library of West Texas.